This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Lori Vallow Daybell. At this point, this is what I'm saying. Lori effing Daybell has finally broken her silence in a Dateline exclusive. She sat down for a jailhouse interview with none other than Mr. Dateline himself, Keith Morrison, where she doubled down on her innocence, claimed divine visions of her own exoneration, and continued to insist she did nothing wrong, despite mountains of evidence, a conviction, and life in prison. This is a woman who saw herself as a goddess, thought her own children were zombies, and now apparently she believes she's going to walk free. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, joining us to discuss these very genius legal maneuverings. Eric, as a former prosecutor and defense attorney, let's start here. What's your reaction to Lori's first ever interview? And if you were her attorney, how hard would you be face-palming it right now? Because saying, Jesus showed me I won't be in prison, is not exactly a legally sound defense strategy.
Yeah, you know, right. I mean, you can't subpoena Jesus to come and testify for you. So that's going to be a problem. You know, look, this is perilous. And usually the attorney and the client would do some cost-benefit analysis and say, hey, look, what can we gain from doing this interview? Is there a message the public hasn't heard that we think they need to hear that's going to help us? And what can we lose by doing this? And the side of what you can lose, I think, so substantially outweighs the potential benefit in this matter. And so, yeah, I'd be pulling my hair out.
When I saw that Keith has an interview with her the other day, I was shocked. And my first reaction was, what kind of attorney is going to... Oh, she is her own attorney. So it's probably really not that difficult to get an interview with Lori Daybell right now, considering how much she likes to talk. And I guess she's in control of her destiny at this point. Let's watch a quick clip from that Dateline exclusive. It is airing on the 7th of March, 2025. So depending when you're seeing this, you may already be able to go watch it on demand, or you got to wait. I know I am staying in that night to watch this interview. Let's take a quick preview of what we will see on Dateline.
Chad was convicted and he's on death row now.
I understand that, yeah.
But
he has some fascinating
stories.
How could
you possibly think that Chad would be exonerated after what happened?
The same way I will be exonerated. We will both be exonerated in the future.
Because?
I have seen things in the future that Jesus showed me when I was in heaven.
Uh-huh.
And we were not in jail. And we were not in prison. And they were still in the future from now.
How did it change the way you view the world?
I guess I always was like a very positive, see the best in people kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched someone that I knew my entire life, you know, do what she did. And it just changed the way I view people. The way that my sister was treated was with hate. That's not even human. To do what they did to her.
It's going to be quite the conversation. They've covered this so well from the beginning. Just what's your reaction to that as an attorney?
You know, one thing that jumps out at me is contrast the presentations between Lori Vallow Daybell and her son in just those brief clips. And think about how a jury might perceive each individual. You know, the son seems sincere and aggrieved and credible. Lori Vallow Daybell seems like she's in the clouds somewhere in this fantastical world that she's created for herself that in part helped justify, in her mind, the killing of the children, at least according to some. And so these statements by Lori Vallow Daybell actually play in to the prosecution's likely theme at the upcoming trial.
Let me ask you how this is going to work, because trials, you know, the pretrial motions, all that, deciding what can be admitted, what can't be admitted, what's going to be an argument, what's not going to be an argument, like we saw in Delphi. That was a prime example, very clear cut. Here's what I want to say. Well, sorry, you're not allowed to say that. This is kind of a similar situation. Lori's like, here's what I want to say. Is a judge going to allow her to argue this stuff in court? I mean... How and why, if it will be?
You know, in most jurisdictions, when there is a pro se litigant, a person who's representing themselves, mm-hmm. there are court rules in place that say, hey, we need to relax some of these strictures, some of these evidentiary requirements for this pro se individual to ensure that they get a fair shake, they get a fair trial, that sort of thing. So I think the judge is likely going to lean on the side of allowing in a lot of stuff. Now, if it gets too far afield, certainly the judge could shut it down. But I think we're going to see a fair amount of this at the trial, as the judge wants to be cautious to not overly restrict the defendant's presentation.
I know the big question everybody has is how is, because Idaho, I'm answering my question already. How does she not, or how does this not be argued as insanity? I know Idaho doesn't have the insanity defense, or this is in Arizona, actually, where it's being tried. I know they too don't necessarily have quite the same sort of defense. It's similar to Idaho in a lot of ways. But when people see this, I mean, is she basically arguing insanity without arguing insanity?
It very well could be. You know, insanity defenses have strict requirements that have to be met. There are evaluations that have to be done. It is a protracted and involved process. But when you have a pro se litigant who's kind of pretty loosey-goosey about everything, she might get in there and sort of play upon the jury's sense of sympathy. Hey, this person is not all there. And even though it might not meet the threshold of an insanity defense, do we give her some kind of break because of how crazy she seems?
I mean, she's in prison for the rest of her life on the other charges alone. I don't believe she's up for death on this one, is it? I don't think it's a capital case technically, right?
I'm not aware of them bringing the death penalty.
So, I mean, she really has nothing to lose either way on any of this, other than just more of her dignity, which is pretty much gone at this point. Just getting out there and making these arguments and getting in court, there are certain rules of decorum in a courtroom, and I can't imagine she's going to be following them. I mean, could this thing, without constantly, Lori, you can't say that. Lori, you have to wait. Lori, you got to do this. Just constantly reminding her just how you have to handle this. Or as you said, you know, sometimes these rules are relaxed when you have the defendant themselves acting as their own attorney. Are they more gracious on those sort of things? Or at some point, is it going to be like, look, this, you've crossed a line. I can see her saying something that she's not supposed to be able to say. And really affecting this case in a way where the judge is going to say, you're out. Am I insane for thinking that, or where do you think this could go?
Oh, sure. I think there are going to be ample opportunities for the case to completely devolve during trial, and those will come from Lori Vallow Daybell. And look, she has her position, and she seems like pretty... or she's feigning righteousness about it, and perhaps she really believes it. I don't know. So she wants to get it out there. She did this interview. And so certainly she's going to have that tendency and that motivation at trial to try to get that stuff in front of the jury too. The judge is going to have to lock it down at some point, especially when we start getting into talks about the metaphysical and otherworldly stuff that just have zero relevance or evidentiary basis in the upcoming trial.
Where do you see the objections coming fast and furious at Lori? How are they going to end up having to shut her down on just, you know, her way of thinking, her candor, her demeanor, her just belief in these crazy, crazy things that she's very willing and ready to argue?
The prosecutor is going to have to think long and hard about when to object and to what, for a number of reasons. One is because the prosecutor doesn't want to look like they're ganging up on this poor lady who doesn't have an attorney, and you have this seasoned lawyer in the courtroom and he's just bullying her. You don't want that impression. Sometimes you don't want the pro se person to just run all over and do whatever they want. But maybe in this case, the prosecutor withholds some objections to just show how unstable and out of touch this individual is, and how they could be capable of something really extreme just based on the extreme nature of their views.
Kind of let her just dig her own hole. Like, go for it. Let's see what happens.
There's going to be some of that.
Do you think Lori's going to be calling any witnesses, or is this going to be just like an opening statement and I got nothing else and it goes over to defense? Or how do you think this is going to be played?
In watching some of the pretrial hearings where she is pro se, but she did at some point have advisory counsel who's kind of making suggestions and likely preparing things in advance of these proceedings, I imagine she's going to have some assistance. I imagine she's going to have some questions for some of the prosecution witnesses. You know, is she going to have some elaborate coordinated defense with a bunch of witnesses and experts and diagrams and charts and stuff like that? No chance. No. But will she put up a fight? I think she's pretty feisty.
Why do you think she decided to do this interview right now? I mean, is this a strategy? Is you know, crazy like a fox, you know, Lori Vallow, or is she just crazy in choosing to do this interview?
I don't see any well thought out strategic decision in favor of doing this interview. I think she is desperate. She's scared. She feels like the narrative has been 100% against her. She's mentioned these court TV commercials that make her look crazy. And I think she just kind of wants to stick up for herself a little bit in the way that makes sense to her.
Could the prosecution use this interview against her? Like, I mean, we've only seen like seconds of it, so I can only imagine what else we're going to be seeing with Keith here. But just her use of, you know, her divine vision of exoneration as evidence. Can they use that as a continued evidence of lack of remorse, making it even harder for her to argue for any sort of leniency when it comes to sentencing?
They can absolutely use it in, you know, technically speaking, it's what's called an admission by a party opponent. So if the defendant's making a statement, that statement comes in against the defendant, typically. And certainly there are a number of ways in which they could use it during the trial phase to show, hey, an innocent person who's lost their husband and also their children would be acting a whole lot different in an interview than the way she acted. And then also at the guilt phase, like you said, to show a lack of remorse and to show how this person doesn't really think they did anything wrong, and who's to say they're not going to do something wrong again.
In other cases where you have your own representation, and if they're, you know, if your representative is saying crazy shit like this out in public, you could make the argument that, you know, ineffective counsel here and use that on an appeal. When you're representing yourself, though, and you're willingly choosing to do all of that, could this be used as an argument for that if, say, she gets another attorney after all of this? Or does the court look at it very differently in this unique case?
In this unique case, I don't think she can make any kind of ineffective assistance of counsel based on these decisions that she's solely made. Mm-hmm. There's a concept called invited error. And it's like, hey, if there were some things that went bad that made it so that Lori Vallow had an unfair trial, that could be grounds to get a new trial. But if the source of those things is Lori Vallow Daybell herself, these are decisions she made, you don't get to profit from errors that you inject into legal proceedings.
What are the odds that Lori gets someone on that jury? Because obviously you just need one. She gets some sort of crazy religious zealot on there that also believes they're having conversations with Jesus, and he's showing them visions of the future in their own life. And they could look at this and go, oh, that happens to me too. Maybe she is, you know, talking the truth. But then you'd have to justify that those visions all justified murdering your, well, it's not about the kids, but it would be murdering your ex-husband right, and attempted murder on Boudreaux. So the kids aren't being argued in this. Can the kids be brought up in this?
Potentially, yes. Now, if Lori Vallow Daybell had an attorney, that attorney would file a motion to exclude any reference to the kids. But what's likely going to happen is Lori's probably going to testify. And if she testifies, the prosecutor gets to bring up any prior felony conviction she has, including for killing her own kids. And so it's likely coming in that way. It could come in through a larger sort of contextual information about all of these series of events related to her belief system and that kind of thing that contributed to the alleged crimes committed. So I think one way or another, the jury's going to hear about this, and it's going to be a big problem.
Is there a chance, because this trial is still quite a ways away this year, do you think we're going to see what we're expecting to see? Do you think we're going to see Lori actually representing herself, or do you think between now and then she's going to get an attorney? Can she get an attorney at this point? Is it up to her at this point if she brings someone on, or has that bridge already passed her in terms of legal dynamics in this case?
Sometimes it depends on the jurisdiction. In Colorado, where I practice, if a person has chosen to represent themselves, they necessarily waive their right to have an attorney. Now, could they rescind that waiver and say, oh, no, wait a second, I actually do need an attorney? They could make that attempt, and a judge might say, okay, in order to protect the integrity of any potential conviction, I'll let you have the attorney even though you waive the right. Is Lori Vallow Daybell the type to kind of go back on her position like that and ask for help? She's not really that type to me.
She's not. But some people believe that she's faking all this, that this is all an act, and she's, you know, smart like a fox and just doing this as an act. I don't tend to believe that. I think she's nuts. And, you know, in the very scientific term that it is, nuts. But that being said, if she were to get an attorney, could this be part of a strategy to get up close to the trial date and then go, just keep doing crazy shit, keep doing weird interviews and saying insane things, and then I think I need an attorney, and then you get an attorney on board, and then you got to ask for more time because the attorney has to prepare. Is this a strategy to just keep delaying this like indefinitely, or do you think a judge would say, yeah, you can have an attorney, but we're not changing the date?
It certainly could be, and it'd be a very creative and risky strategy, but not unprecedented. You know, I've talked before about delay essentially being a friend of the defense. You never know what can happen. Witnesses can die or move away. Whenever we look at Trump's cases and the delay, you know, it kind of just kept pushing them out.
Look at the Adelsons. Yeah.
We don't have any cases anymore. Yeah. Things happen. And so would it make sense for her to align herself with some delay and pursue that because of what could happen in terms of the case falling apart? Certainly.
I don't know. I walk away from Lori Daybell every day when I see these stories, and I'm just like, yep, Lori effing Daybell. You never know what's going to happen.
The world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.